Howdy, folks. Time for Matinee 75.
Yeah.
Now, we did not get to the movie theater this week.
No, coronavirus, man.
No, not because of coronavirus, because nothing new started. That's why.
Let me at least.
We've seen everything that, other than Brahms, yeah. But I don't really care about
that. I've been sick for a couple of weeks. I've got cough drops in my mouth, so you got to excuse me because, you know, my sinuses and everything.
Yeah, that's what
I got talking. That COVID. She doesn't believe me, but.
You don't have COVID.
I got it.
Well, because if you had COVID, I would have it too, because you've had the shit for like...
Let me fucking fantasize.
Why would you want to fantasize about having a disease?
It makes it more exciting.
Okay, I guess.
Like I'm a part of something.
He's still waiting for the zombie apocalypse.
I'm fucking ready for zombie apocalypse.
He can't wait for that shit to happen.
I've been preparing for zombie apocalypse for years.
Some people just want the world to end for some whatever reason.
I'm going to be proven to be a genius one of these days. You're going to see.
Okay.
You're going to say, damn, Tom, you were right. You were right.
That'll be the day.
Right. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I'm just fucking with you.
Okay.
So we didn't go to the movie theater, like I said, not because of coronavirus, but because nothing really new started. Yeah, well, did that.
All right.
But that's not why. Yeah. So we saw some shit in our very own home. One of them was on Netflix, one of them was on Shudder, and one of them we bought on Blu-ray.
Yeah. Yeah, fucking Color Out of Space.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about that one.
We'll talk
that was
about
an excellent
that one
flick.
God, it was so good.
If you don't have that one, go ahead and buy it.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to talk about is a new one that came out on Netflix called Girl on the Third Floor. Now, this was the, I believe, directorial debut of a guy named Travis Stevens. Now, the main guy who was in this, I didn't realize it when I was watching. His name is CM Punk, and he's actually an MMA fighter. So I believe this is his first acting role. Now, he is very... I couldn't decide while I was watching the movie. I guess, like, the more I thought about it, the more I was like, okay, I see where he was going with that. While I was watching the movie, I couldn't decide. I'm like, he's either like a really bad actor or this is like a black comedy. Now I'm leaning more toward black comedy because he comes off very much like Bruce Campbell. And yeah. If they ever make a biopic of Bruce Campbell, this dude should definitely, well, I mean, Bruce Campbell can still play Bruce Campbell in a biopic of Bruce Campbell. But if somehow he wasn't available, this guy could totally do it because he has the same facial expressions, the same type of voice, the same everything, the same mannerisms.
My impression was that the tone they were going for was kind of like Evil Dead.
It was Evil Dead meets Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Because there was like some kind of weird shit going on with the house, like the house bleeding and stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and you could tell, you know, he's not really taking it seriously and you're not really taking it seriously, but they're entertaining you. And that's kind of the old school way we used to watch horror movies. I loved Evil Dead.
Yeah,
I didn't take it seriously, even though it scared me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was weird because, you know, but then you laugh it off. And then you keep watching. You know,
Now this one, I mean, this movie, Girl on the Third Floor, it's not as zany as Evil Dead. Like, don't get me wrong. But it's kind of in that same spirit. It's a very, you know, Sam Raimi type of spirit, I guess. Even though I don't know if I'd overtly call it a black comedy, but it does have some comedic... Yeah. Like some dry comedic elements to it. So basically the setup is that this guy played by CM Punk, that's not his real name obviously, but that's like his MMA fighter name. So he plays this guy named Don. Now I think he had been a lawyer in Chicago and he somehow fucked up, like he like fucked his clients out of a lot of money or something like he got in trouble. And he is also a fuck up in other ways. Like he's a recovering alcoholic. It's like he cheated on his wife and all this other kind of crap. So he's kind of like, they buy this house kind of out in the country or out in the suburbs rather. And he's going to renovate it because his wife is pregnant. And he's like, okay, we're going to start all over. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop whoring around. And, you know, I'm going to get another job and I'm just going to fix this house up and everything will be perfect. So he has gone to this house and he's going to fix it up all by himself with no help from anybody except his little dog, Cooper. And that's how he's somehow going to, like, heal his relationship, I guess, or kind of get his shit back together. But that's not how it works out. Because turns out this house is kind of haunted, but in a weird sort of way. It's like, it kind of all starts where he's in the house and... this girl turns up who says that she's the neighbor. And she basically just turns up in the backyard and she was like, oh, I live around here and this house has always been abandoned. So I was just kind of hung out. And he's like, okay, let's fuck. You know, pretty much. Yeah, and yeah. I'm like, immediately. It's like, he's trying to be better, but he's already, as soon as he's at the house by himself, he starts drinking again. He starts screwing around again. But it turns out that this girl, you know, it's a trap because...
I was saying, dude, it's a trap.
Well, clearly.
Like, yeah, it's like, as soon as I saw her, I go, nope.
Yeah. Nope. I mean, some...
Women don't do that.
Right, nope. Right. Some beautiful random woman turns up in your backyard... And is like, oh, yeah, I just hang out. And she's basically just throwing herself at him. And he's just like, oh, okay.
She's either some kind of spy or she's a cop and they're investigating you or, you know, or she's trying to steal from you. It's not normal.
That's what I mean. But he falls for it like a dumbass. Well, that's kind of the whole point of his character. He is a sympathetic character, but he's also a fuck up and... That becomes abundantly clear. The interesting thing about this, so like I said, as it goes on, like the house just starts doing weirder and weirder shit. Like all of the, like the outlets start like oozing, various fluids. Sometimes he's knocking holes in the walls, like to tear a wall down or something that looks like pulsating organs or like blood or something like that back then. So the house is kind of like alive. Now he befriends this woman who's like a pastor at the church, like across the street. And she tells him, or he finds out some, that the house used to be like a brothel, like an illegal brothel. The interesting thing about this movie is that, yes, you could say it's like a standard haunted house movie, but it's not like a haunted house movie in the sense that, you know how most haunted house movies are like, oh, something bad happened there in the past and it's like still hanging around. This one almost kind of has, yes, it has that aspect, but apparently... Everybody that lives in the house don't experience the haunting. It was because him being a fuck up in the present is almost kind of like waking it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, it's a little bit like The Shining in that way, where it's like, you know, he's kind of like, you know, his character is weak and so he's vulnerable. So the house is kind of like coming back to life, like to take advantage of his character weakness, basically.
Kind of, in a way, that's also kind of like Evil Dead.
It is kind of,
going out to the cabin and being in the cabin, you know, unlock some stuff from the Necronomicon, you know.
Yeah.
They're just trying to come up with something to show you a scary movie.
Yeah. And the thing that I liked about this one is that it had like a really interesting, like a interesting premise. It also had like a bit of surrealism like going on in it too, which I thought was kind of cool. I really liked the aspect of like the house almost like an organism, you know, where, I mean, literally where there's like, it seemed like there was organs and shit like that behind the walls.
It had pretty good special effects.
It did actually. And I don't think this movie was all that expensive. Yeah. And as I said, this guy's, apparently this is his first movie. The house that they use, that's a real house. And I guess that he had bought that house like to use as the headquarters for his production company. And it was being renovated. And he's like, don't finish renovating it because we're going to make this movie in here, because that was part of the plot, was that this house was being renovated. So...
A lot of good horror franchises kind of started off that way, you know. The guy who did Phantasm.
Yeah.
You know.
Don Coscarelli.
Just kind of make his own movie and just made a bunch of them.
Well, you know? I feel like horror, I mean, I guess all genres, but horror in particular, since that's what I'm most familiar with, it does seem to be better when it's just the vision of one person or a small group of people.
Yeah, it doesn't work out when it's a committee.
When you do horror by committee, it doesn't work out so good. Then you just kind of get these bland, like, jump scary type crap that's just forgettable, you
know? They're kind of best when they're mid to low budget works of from the heart, really.
Yeah, when people that really like the genre or really love the genre and want to do something with it.
Yeah, especially if you're starring in it kind of deal.
Yeah.
I noticed that those are actually get written a lot better. I think it's because the guy who's producing it, directing it, and starring in it, and involved in it, he's kind of making a manifestation of his dreams and his ego.
Yeah.
So it turns out to be, it's better because he cares.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, everything's always better if it's just like a small group of people and they really, really want to do this and this is their vision.
Yeah.
Than if it's just a bunch of faceless people going, well, we need to check these boxes off to make X amount of money. back, you know, it's always going to be better.
Oh, yeah, you want a ghost? Put a ghost in there. Oh, you want a werewolf? Put a werewolf in there. The kids will love it.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, cha-ching. You don't want that going on.
Yeah, well, even though, I mean, I guess that model's successful, too, because
like that
people
guy,
do go see those, but...
Like that director who commented on the review that we did, this was a couple years back, the one about the crazy-ass crack, remember that? Where they were doing the weird drugs and seeing the monsters? That was a long time ago. That was a good movie. I wanted to see that one again.
I can't remember which one you're talking about.
Was it crack that they were doing? Yeah, they were doing that crazy crack and seeing aliens.
Crazy crack. Oh, Welcome to Willits.
Welcome to Willits.
It wasn't crack. It was meth. Some kind of weird weed or something. Yeah. Like some kind of hybrid.
Yeah, and it was putting them in contact with evil aliens, wasn't it? Were they the undead? I'd like to see it again. I liked that movie.
No, I don't think there... Actually, I don't even remember if there were any aliens. They just thought they were aliens.
Right, they were hallucinating them.
They were hallucinating the aliens.
But it didn't matter because you're seeing them.
Yeah.
You're seeing them as you're watching the movie, so, you know.
So, yeah. So this is on Netflix. Like I said, it seems like... I don't think it got a theatrical release. It did play at a whole bunch of film festivals and seemed to have gotten really positive reviews. Like I said, it's not... You know, the best movie I ever saw, like, but it has like a really cool, like, vision to it. So I'm really interested to see what this director does next, because this was a very interesting movie. And I suggest that you. Okay, second movie we saw this week. I've been looking forward to this one for a really long time. H.P. Lovecraft's Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage.
Excellent movie. We ordered it on Blu-ray. We pre-ordered it and it showed up. In good condition, had a slipcover on it. Wasn't steelbook, but didn't really have to be. Excellent movie. Same basic kind of team that did Mandy, wasn't it?
It was the same production team, which is Spectre Vision. That's like a production company that that actor Elijah Wood founded, as far as I know, like him and a couple other people.
It's a work of greatness, kind of like Mandy. It's just a different. It's a Lovecraft story.
It's not quite as crazy as Mandy. Crazy. Like, it has, like, a more grounded story to
still
it, I guess.
Still cool, though.
But it's still really cool.
About a farm. About this family that's on this farm. They actually moved there from the city. It was like an ancestral farm. And meteor lands in the backyard. And it's some kind of weird color, it's some kind of alien thing, gets in the damn groundwater, starts affecting all the animals and bugs, drives them crazy, mutates them. It's alien, whatever it is, and it's alive. Is it one of them, or is it like a collective? It's hard to tell, huh?
I don't think there's any way. I mean, this is kind of one of those, I mean, obviously Lovecraft is very, very difficult to adapt to film, just because so much of his stuff is like... unnameable and undescribable and all this other stuff. So I don't really know if, you know, is there a distinction because it's so alien and we wouldn't understand it? Is there even like a distinction between an individual alien and like a collective of aliens? Or is it just like a vast intelligence that...
Off the top, the movie kind of reminded me of Prince of Darkness, but a good one. One time right. You mix kind of like Prince of Darkness in with The Thing. Carpenter,
this has some very Thing-esque. Yeah,
but it kind of, in some ways, kind of feels a little bit like Mandy because you got Nicolas Cage just being crazy as fuck through the whole thing, or through most
as
of
he
it.
Does.
He's just fucking.
He's a national treasure, and I know what I did.
He's a fucking crazy person, and all kinds of cool shit happens in it. Good special effects, shot real well, good script, and there's going to be more of them. Dude who made it. Talking about doing a Dunwich horror, and that's going to be fucking awesome.
He wants to do a trilogy.
Fucking man. I hope he does In the Mountains of Madness, too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if Guillermo del Toro still has the rights to do that.
Oh, he had the rights to. Yeah, that's been what?
Although it's all in public domain. I guess anybody could make their own.
Yeah.
That's been in, like, development.
He said that
8-9 years
ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I've been wanting to see that, though. But yeah, so Richard Stanley, who wrote and directed this, he did the adaptation. He's been a big Lovecraft fan forever. Now, Richard Stanley, he did Hardware. And he did The Island of Dr. Moreau, where he very famously was fired from it. That was back in 1996.
I actually liked that movie.
Now, they made a whole documentary about that called Lost Souls, which used to be on Shudder, but I didn't get a chance to watch it. And then when I checked yesterday, it wasn't there anymore. But so this guy, he's kind of like a mad genius. So it's like, so he hasn't directed a movie since 1996.
Yeah, in the bonus features, he's saying, "I reclaim my director's chair."
Yeah.
He's this crazy fucking goth dude with like a long black hair and a little goatee.
It's so epic.
Goatee, you know what I mean? And he's in his goth clothes living out in fucking in some ancient part in France up and down mountains with castles and shit.
Yeah.
"I reclaim my director's chair." He's a cool dude.
Yeah, and apparently him and his mom, like he said, his mom used to read H.P. Lovecraft stories to him when he was a kid. And then he said that, you know, when his mom got cancer later on, that he would read the stories to her, like when she was convalescing. And the reason that Jolie Richardson's character in Color Out of Space is recovering from a mastectomy, like from breast cancer. And the reason that he put that in there was like as an homage to his mom, because his mom was the one that kind of instilled the love of Lovecraft into him when he was little. So he's been wanting to do this. And like I said, he has talked about wanting to do the Dunwich Horror next. And he wants to do another movie after that too, but I'm not sure which one.
A lot of cool shit in Dunwich Horror.
It is, yeah.
I would love to see that done by this director. I hope Nicolas Cage is in it.
I hope Nicolas Cage is in all of them.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage should be in all movies.
The director said that Nicolas Cage gave him belief in American Hollywood actors again. So
yeah.
It rekindled his belief that you could have an actor that really cared about what they were doing, were talented, and were fucking crazy. Fucking Nick Cage is fucking crazy.
In a fun way.
Revs himself up, and you can see some behind the scenes shots where he fucking revving himself up into insanity to do these performances. And he, it's like Mandy. He's fucking Mandy knocked it out apart in fucking Mandy.
We actually watched Mandy again, like after we watched this one, so we could like compare them.
These two movies can stand side by side. Mandy though is kind of like the way it's shot and the tone is kind of like a Frank Frazetta painting on acid happening in the early 80s. That's what it's like. Or late 70s stuff bleeding on into it and everything. So imagine, it's like something out of damn Heavy Metal magazine. Remember Heavy Metal comic book? It's like that, kind of. This one is just as good, but the tone's a lot different. You're dealing with sci-fi horror.
This one has a lot more humor in it too.
Yeah.
And not all of it comes from Nicolas Cage, because some of the kids, you know, the three kids that are in it, which I thought was funny, they named the daughter Lavinia, which is a character from the Dunwich Horror, Lavinia Whateley.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like trying to get in on that, you know, ahead of time. But there's, you know, there's a lot more like with the son being kind of like, you know, a stoner, and then like the daughter being like a Wiccan, and then Nicolas Cage wanting to move this family out to this farm, I guess because, you know, his wife has had cancer and they're trying to, like, move away from the city and stuff. And he has decided that he's going to, like, grow vegetables and also raise alpacas because they're the animal of the future.
But he thought people ate alpacas.
I'm sure people eat alpacas if there's nothing else around.
No.
But I feel like they usually milk alpacas or ride them.
No, you make sweaters.
Or make sweaters out of them. They're pack animals, right?
It's like making wool. Yeah, it's a pack animal.
Yeah.
You can get wool off of them.
But the funny thing about it, I was watching a review of this, but like on some other channel, and somebody in the comments said that I never knew that I needed to see Nicolas Cage milking an alpaca.
Yeah.
But now that I'm happy that I fucking saw that.
The movie's got real good special effects. There's mutated insect-looking things. Some of it's practical effects. Some of it's CG. The color from outer space, which you have to see it to understand it. It was like some kind of weird... It was a meteor first, but then somehow it channeled down lightning bolts. And there was also kind of like this weird magenta color that came down with it. Some kind of life force, life energy.
Yeah, it kind of like leaches into the ground and into the water and stuff like that. Because you can hear like Tommy Chong, who is in this as like kind of like a stoner character named Ezra, who lives on their, like on this little thing on their property. And he's kind of like listening to them. So you can hear like kind of these weird like alien voices like under the ground and stuff.
Yeah, and it's leeching into things and drawing the life out of stuff and trying to transform the fucking, trying to transform the at least this place, that part of Earth into wherever it came from, there's some kind of an extra dimensional element. It's not clearly defined, and that's just the way it is in the book.
But that's the way it is in the story. I mean, in the story, obviously they had to, you know, because the story is quite short. But they, so in the story, like, you know, the surveyor guy is coming there and talking to this dude who lives on the property, who's kind of like the Ezra character in the movie. And he's telling about what happened to the Gardner family, like, many years ago. This one, it's, you know, the timeline is very truncated, so because it happens over, like, a pretty short period of time. They move to this farm, the, you know, the asteroid or the meteor lands, and then everything starts to happen, like, really quickly. Like, they start going insane. Like, the tomatoes come up, like, all deformed. Like, the alpacas go ape shit, and, like, you know, some thing-like stuff happens. Some thing-like stuff happens to some members of the family as well. And everything is kind of, like, bathed in this. And, the little kid, I think he's actually played by the little kid that was in Haunting of Hill House, not the kid with the big glasses. And he starts, like, saying there's a man down in the well, like, somebody down in the well is, like, talking to him. So all this mysterious shit starts to happen.
Yeah.
And at first, I think he thinks, the little kid at least, thinks the color is, like, really beautiful. Like, they all seem to think it's, like, because it is super cool looking when it comes in the wood. It's, like, this pink and purple. And,
yeah. Don't want to spoil this movie, though.
No.
It's streaming now. They're streaming it off of YouTube.
Yeah.
You could probably find it in other places. I'd recommend it on Blu-ray. If you liked Mandy, if you're a fan of Mandy, you will love this movie.
Yeah. It's not, like I said,
if you like Lovecraft movies.
This is one of the best, if not the best, Lovecraft adaptations.
Right up there with From Beyond, the Reanimator series, the one with the Jeffrey Combs type.
Yeah,
movies. You know what I mean? They're like that. It's actually better than those, and it's a lot more. The quality's higher. It looks a lot better.
And it really seems. I think it's
probably closer to the original story.
Yeah, I mean, it is changed some. They do have, like, a surveyor character that comes there, and they are building a hydroelectric dam, which I think in the original story they were going to flood the shit and, like, make a reservoir out of it, you know, implying that the water was going to be poisoned, so everybody that drank out of it was going to, you know what I mean, even though they didn't go. So they do go into that, but they're basically, in the story, it's the surveyor talking to the guy that lived on the property about the shit that happened to the family, like, a long time ago. Whereas in the movie, it's brought to the present day. Like, you're seeing what's happening to the Gardner family.
This is definitely as good as Dagon.
Yeah. And this is
Dagon's
a very
good one. Dagon's good.
This is obviously a lot more sci-fi oriented than that. It's like, I've seen some people compare it to, like, Annihilation, but it's, in visually at least, the same cinematographer that did this also did I Am Mother, which we reviewed a while back.
Yeah, that was a good movie.
That was a really good sci-fi movie too. That's on still on Netflix, I think, if you want to check that one out.
It's the subject matter that's different. You're not dealing with sea gods or you know, Cthulhu or anything like that. You're dealing with some kind of an alien force. And that's really what makes the story different from Dagon. It's a different topic.
Yeah.
But because it's a different, it's a different creature. The situation's different, but it's just, it to me, I liked it as much as Dagon.
I did too. It's a totally different kind of thing, even though it's both Lovecraftian, obviously. But like I said, it's more cosmic than
Kind of like, remember in Creepshow, the one where the guy's getting eaten by the moss.
Yeah.
What was the name of that?
Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill.
Yeah, that's a very short story. This is kind of like a very high end version of that.
And I think Stephen King. Because Color Out of Space was Stephen King's, as far as I can remember, was his favorite Lovecraft story. Mm-hmm. So I think that when he wrote Lonesome Death of Jordy Verrill, I think that he was, that was like his riff on it.
Okay, yeah.
Because I've heard, like, in Dance Macabre, he talked about that story quite a bit.
Right.
Much he liked it. So, yeah, so definitely.
So this is the story that inspired that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can see it, like, with the alien weed and everything like that, and coming from the meteor. Because when we were watching Color Out of Space and the meteor landed, the first, I had to restrain myself from saying meteor shit from fucking Creepshow. Because I know that that's, like, where that inspired from. But yeah, so definitely, definitely, this seems to be getting, it got, like, a very brief theatrical release. Because I know that some of the channels, like horror channels I watched, they had seen it in the theater. I think it only played in like 80 theaters in the US. And
Hollywood.
I think it played in a few in the UK as well, because I saw some British reviewers that had seen it in the theater.
Hollywood politics. Hollywood kept it out. They didn't want to compete with their movies. How much you want to bet?
I feel like a lot of movies don't get a wide theatrical. I think it's just because they don't think it's going to make any money.
I don't believe so. I think
which is dumb because...
This movie and Mandy, I think, would have done better at the box office than a lot of the fucking shitty horror movies we've been seeing lately.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's the sad thing. Is like these.
I think it has to do with who makes them and who their friends are and how deep they are in the scene. And these are kind of independent films, and they don't want them in there competing with the money. They don't. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
That's just what I'm thinking. I think it's business. I think part of the Hollywood business is to keep competitors out of your damn theaters. Gotta be. I would do it. So they must be doing it.
Yeah. But like I said, this did get a limited theatrical release, you know, not just at festivals and stuff. It actually did play in some theaters in some bigger cities in this country and maybe in other places in Europe, too. I'm not sure. But I know that it played in some theaters in the UK.
This would have kicked ass in the theaters if it had
I feel like a lot. And I kind of wish that I'd gotten to see it on the big screen because I'm sure it looked amazing.
If this had been promoted right and sent into the theaters, it would have done well. So would have Mandy. Mandy would have done real fucking well.
I would also love to see that.
Yeah. Imagine you saw Mandy in Dolby.
Yeah.
Dolby Theater.
Somebody, you know what? Here in Orlando, we have like a little indie theater. Well, it's been there like forever, called the Enzian. I wonder, would they ever do, they should do a Nicolas Cage double feature. They should do this and Mandy. Mandy,
yeah.
I would be first in line for that shit.
We watched them back to back, and it was awesome. Yeah,
because I really would really love to see them on the big screen. I mean, these definitely need to be seen on the big screen.
Now, if he comes out with Dunwich Horror, and it's in the same vein as those, same level of quality, which I'm pretty sure it will be, and if it's got Nicolas Cage in it, I'm hoping for Nicolas Cage. Fucking Dunwich Horror will be knocked out of the park.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited to see. I really do hope that he can get like.
Because that's a creepy story.
Honestly, I don't know how much this cost to make. I couldn't really find like a good figure of how much this cost to make. It was very low budget, I'm sure, but it doesn't look like it at all.
Through most of the Dunwich Horror books, the monsters are kind of invisible. They're made visible at the very end so you can fight them. So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. And like I said, I'm pulling for you, Richard Stanley. Seriously. Do a Kickstarter or something. Get some more Lovecraft shit going.
Yeah, you need to
will watch it.
You need to get the fans together, get a Kickstarter, raise the money, make the fucking movie, man.
Yeah, we're there.
And then, you know, for a certain amount of money, like, I'd give you the money for Blu-ray up front for a pre-sale. And that's where the money could come from.
Yeah, because we bought this on pre-sale.
Yep.
How much was it? I don't even remember.
Probably about $20.
I think it was $20.
Yeah.
Yeah, we ordered it like before it came out. Yeah, it came out on February 25th.
I would hook up with Ethan Van Sciver because they've been doing that. They did the Expendables, the Expendables Go to Hell comic book. They raised like $100,000+ just in a few weeks.
Yeah.
And Sylvester Stallone was involved in that. So there's got to be something going on kind of like what Van Sciver's doing. Because, you know, I mean, they're trying to bring good movies and comics back, you know, independent stuff.
Well, like I said, it's kind of like, it's a lot
kind of restrictive, man.
Well, it's a lot better nowadays because look how, one, it's a lot cheaper to make movies. Yeah. And two, there's so many more like options. You don't like have to go the big studio route. You don't even have to go to like, even back in the 70s, you had to go to like grindhouse theaters and stuff like that. Yeah. You don't have to do that anymore. You can just go straight to fucking VOD. There's all kind of different like options that you
go straight to your fans. They'll fucking pay you.
Yeah,
because the
crowdsourcing, man.
Yeah, the old fashioned studio way, man. You know, it's too corrupt. Let's be honest, man.
Well, and they want to see a return on their investment, and a lot of times they kind of want to make these big tentpole type movies for $100 million, which means that now you have to make $300 million for that movie to even break even. And a lot of those movies are okay, but they're not really all that great.
Well, they have huge overheads and they have fucking mansions and pools to pay for, and you know what I mean? They have to cover the losses that they made with the other movies that fucking bombed.
Yeah.
It's too expensive. Why do that when you can just make the movie you want to make? You don't have to worry about paying off the shit that failed.
Yeah.
And paying off fucking every Tom, Dick, and Harry to do these.
But you know, that's
jobs.
Why I was so happy that Universal actually made fucking The Invisible Man for $7 million.
Yeah,
and it was fucking great.
Good movie.
I said, see, you don't need to fucking, you don't need to make a mummy movie for $200 million with Tom Cruise in it. We don't want to see that shit.
Yeah, and
make a good movie for $7 million.
Yeah, and it made 3 times its money back within a few days, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, because it's a good fucking movie.
Less is more nowadays. You don't need all that fucking
That's
CG.
What I mean. I mean, CG, we've seen it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yay, you can do everything with CGI.
Great script.
Don't. It's a crutch.
Great script. Raw subject matter that's true to the original source material. Great actors. Tell a good fucking story. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
You don't need a bunch of money, a bunch of shit, fucking practical effects, you know, it's good, but you need to spend fucking millions and millions of dollars on CG.
You don't, no. I mean, the Color Out of Space had a little bit of CG in it.
It was just enough.
But it wasn't like overbearing. It was just kind of like a little bit like an insect or something like that. And it had a lot of
itself.
And it had a lot of practical effects as well, like a lot of the kind of creature effects and stuff.
Well, your practical effects enhanced by some CG, which is the way really.
That's what you should do.
You know, The Thing 2012, you know, like the Thing remake? It was better looking than that, if you ask me. That's the way the Thing remake should have looked.
Yeah.
I think they beat the Thing remake. Because some of the CG in the Thing remake didn't look... I mean, it was good for a day, but just didn't really look right.
Like I said,
they
would rather...
They wanted to do it practical, and they fucked that up. The studio didn't want it
to
be
practical. I mean, practical effects always look better. And practical effects, if you must use CGI just like to enhance the practical effects, just do minimal.
It's a mixture.
Minimal.
Yeah.
Don't make a whole fucking creature out of CGI though, because
it doesn't move right.
It still never looks right.
It doesn't look like it has.
Even nowadays,
it doesn't look like it has any weight. But everything that they showed in this movie was spot on.
Yeah,
they didn't show us a whole.
And like I said, I'm sure it didn't have a huge budget. I don't know what the budget
and
was.
And it wasn't like a monster a minute type movie. It showed you just enough.
Yeah.
It wasn't too much. I liked it.
I did too. So it's visually amazing. Yeah. It was just like a really fun, just a really good adaptation, a very close adaptation of the story. It was modernized, obviously.
Yeah. Only seen it once. We're going to see it again.
Yeah, I definitely want to watch it again. But yeah, this is one that you should definitely buy on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
You know. Support this shit. Maybe he'll make more Lovecraft movies if we're lucky. Yeah. And hopefully Nicolas Cage will be in there acting like a crazy person.
Yeah.
And milking alpacas.
Yeah.
Okay, third movie we saw this week just dropped on Shudder. Now, the weird thing, from what I could determine when I was researching this movie, I think this movie was actually made in 2017, but it didn't get a wide release on VOD until late last year, like late 2019. And Shudder just added it a few days ago, and Shudder has it listed as a 2019 movie. So I said, well, that's fair enough. That's still kind of new. And I needed a third movie for the show, so I decided to go ahead and watch it. This movie is called Replace.
Yeah.
Now, the guy that directed it, Norbert Kiel, I believe he's German, and this is his first. He had made like a couple of other movies in Germany, and I believe this was shot in Germany too, but it's in English. And probably the biggest draw of this is Barbara Crampton, isn't it, you guys?
She's got to be in her late 50s, man. She's still hot, man. She looks cute.
Yeah.
She looks real cute.
She looks great in this. She plays like kind of like a mad scientist type of character. Not a mad scientist, but like a creepy scientist.
If you don't know who that is, she was the one that was played in a lot of the H.P. Lovecraft movies.
Yeah, Stuart Gordon, yeah.
He was in Reanimator.
She was in Reanimator.
And she was in From Beyond. And she was that fucking hot blonde.
Yeah. And she's still acting nowadays. It's like, I was really surprised to see her in this. She was in a movie called Beyond the Gates. She was in the latest season of Channel Zero. Kind of briefly, she was in a couple of episodes for that. But yeah, so she's in. And you know what's weird is like, just like probably an hour before we recorded the show, because I follow Barbara Crampton on Instagram, and I just saw that she just finished shooting a movie, which I guess is a horror movie, called Jacob's Wife. And that movie was directed by Travis Stevens, who's the same guy that directed Girl on the Third Floor. So I was like, woo, all three movies are connected this week, and I didn't even mean to do that.
Wow.
But yeah, so this movie, Replace, it's kind of a little Cronenbergian. One thing that I will say, it's like, if you really like stuff like The Neon Demon or The Perfection or Perfect, or some of these movies that have this kind of like retro wave aesthetic, like the lighting in this and the score in this is very like really, really cool. Like, I fucking loved the score of this
movie. A
lot
of new retro wave music in it.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. So that whole like kind of aesthetic is like super cool. A lot of like neon lighting and stuff. So the basic story is about this girl, and her name is Kira Mabin. And as the story goes on, you discover that she is, one, suffering from memory lapses. Two, she's also suffering from this strange skin condition, which is kind of like, it starts on her hand and then it starts to spread. It's almost like her skin is getting like really crusty, like aging prematurely.
Almost kind of like eczema.
Yeah, like really, really bad.
Yeah.
So as the story goes on, you kind of figure, she figures out that that the only way that she can like restore her skin is basically like taking other people's, yeah. like cutting other people's skin off and like sticking it on there, and then it like kind of stays in there. So I liked this movie, but it took me a while to get into it because yeah. I think what it's weird because this movie, when I was saying that all these three movies were linked together, because this movie was the director co-wrote it. The other writer was Richard Stanley, the same guy that directed Color Out of Space. So he co-wrote this movie. Now, the only thing that I wish they had kind of started it somewhere different, because I think it took me about 15, 20 minutes to catch the wave of the movie yeah. because they started out where her character is having memory lapses, which factors into the story later on. But because, you know, she's at the beginning, she's talking to this guy, she takes this guy home, and then, like, she wakes up, he's gone, and then she leaves the apartment, like, going back to her house, but then she's there, but then her house is that guy's house, and she can't figure out, and she keeps, like, hearing people in her apartment, she doesn't know who they are. So it takes a while for that to pay off, so I was kind of, like, confused from, like, what the fuck is yeah. going on? Like, I get that she has the skin thing and she's going to the doctor. And there's kind of all this stuff where Barbara Crampton plays the doctor. And she's kind of, like, telling her, yeah, we need to do this and that and the other. But Kira doesn't remember some things. And so I feel like, I know that they were trying to make it that you were just as confused as the character, like, trying to put you in her shoes. But I think that I wish that they had started a little bit
yeah.
in a different spot, because it took me a while. But once I got into the movie, I really got into it.
Yeah, you're calling it right. I mean, it violated that 10-15 minute rule I have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I'm not hooked up into the movie, if I'm not into it in within 5, 10, 15 minutes, I'm never going to be. And that's kind of what happened. I stopped paying attention to it because... it's kind of like, you know, once you lose the suspension of disbelief, you no longer can enjoy the movie. Once, it's kind of like that for me. If I can't get into it in that first 10-15 minutes, I start to reject the movie for some reason. Just the way my mind works. So I start ignoring it. So I started looking down at my tablet and getting lost in that. And every now and then I'd look up and the movie was getting better, but by that time I didn't care. It's because yes. it was too slow.
Well, it's just, it wasn't even, the beginning wasn't slow. It's just that I wasn't sure what was going on.
Right.
But then, like, after about 15 or 20 minutes, when all the threads started coming together, and I was like, oh, okay, I yeah. see, like, where they were going with it. And then it started getting really good. And, yeah, so this kind
I'm very impatient and intolerant.
Yeah.
If I'm confused for too long, like 5 minutes or so, I just go, ah, fuck you.
Well, no, because like I said, you know, I'm willing to, and we were talking about this earlier when we were talking about Assault on Precinct 13, yeah. where I think sometimes when you watch a movie, you're like fighting it.
Yeah.
Whereas I don't fight it. I just watch it.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot for me to turn a movie off. Like, I will usually, right. you know, give it a chance to do what it's going to do.
Well, that's what's so good about our show, because you can write stories. You're a professional author. I'm just Joe Blow. You know what I mean? I'm going to be the average motherfucker that's just sitting in a theater, who supposedly bought the ticket. Okay? There's more of me than there are you in that theater.
Unfortunately.
I guarantee you. Okay? So I can predict how well the movie's going to go because I understand the lowest common denominator. I understand them.
I understand it too.
You understand them because, you know, I can relate to it. So... you know,
but yeah, like I said, so
you can't get too fancy with me, or you can't get too you can't get too vague, you can't get too confusing, you can't be too slow. There's kind of like a, but the thing is I don't like it real shallow either. Like I can watch a Marvel movie and go, yeah, big fucking deal, and then forget it. instantly.
Well, I forget a lot of the Marvel ones too. Well,
because I kind of enjoy it like it's damn ride or like a roller coaster ride, but then the credits roll and I couldn't tell you what I saw.
Yeah, I don't remember a lot of them. Yeah. Like I enjoyed them at the time, but they don't like stick with me. And I know other people aren't like that. Like a lot of people really dig them, and that's cool. But it's like I said, I enjoy them at the time, but I don't.
That wasn't the case of Color Out of Space.
Well, yeah, that kind
of. That was like, over, and I remembered it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. This one, like I said, even though it started out, like I said, not necessarily slow, but kind of like I wasn't really sure what was happening. And then this, like, you know, she has this neighbor that keeps coming over that seems like really insistent that she keeps like coming over to the house and stuff. And I was just like, what the fuck is going on with that chick? She's weird. And all this other kind of stuff. But as it goes on and all of the plot threads start to come together, and there are actually two really big kind of plot twists in this that I didn't really see coming that have to do not only with the neighbor that keeps coming over, but also with her skin condition and what it is, where it came from, what Barbara Crampton is up to. So, you know, I'm not going to spoil her or anything like that, but there are like two kind of big revelations in there that I didn't really see coming. And so this is kind of like the type of movie where it gave me a little bit of a vibe like that one we reviewed a while back, like Bliss, but I liked this a lot better because there was a lot more story to this one, where Bliss was just kind of like everyone hanging out in clubs and drinking blood and stuff. This one actually had a story and a progression and a plot twist that came around like at the end of the second act and stuff like that. So it had more of a narrative thrust than Bliss did. The look was kind of similar. But I think the look of it reminded me more of that weird, like, sci-fi one, Perfect. But again, this one actually had a story, whereas Perfect sort of did, but it was just very kind of, like, nebulous.
Yeah.
And this one had, even though this one takes a while to get where it's going, but once I got to the end, I was like, okay, I know why they did that, because they were playing with the whole idea of her memory lapse, and you find out why she has those memory lapses like later on, and then it makes sense. So this is kind of one where I feel like probably a second viewing would, you know, I would probably appreciate it more in the second viewing. It's not really gory, but there are some kind of Cronenbergian. I mean, this is about a girl who is killing people and cutting off bits of their skin and like sticking it on herself. So if that sounds like it's going to gross you out, then it'll probably gross you out. But it's not, you know, it's not the most like graphic shit I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is a little bit of like icky type of.
For me, the 10-15 minute rule still played out. Usually if I can't hook up in that first 10-15 minutes, I'm not going to like the movie. As the movie did get better as it went on, but I could tell by what was going on, I wouldn't have really liked the movie much anyway. It's I would say it's a very female movie. It's mostly women. They're mostly cute. They're mostly having sex with each other. Which some guys might get into that, but
a lot of the theme of it too is that you know, women try like being afraid of getting old.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like a theme too.
Yeah.
I also liked kind of the ending scene where Barbara Crampton was doing what she was doing. I really felt like that was an homage to Dead Ringers. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah,
but just the way they kind of shot it and like the color scheme and stuff like that kind of reminded me very much of that. This did have a little bit of a Cronenbergian vibe to it, but kind of cross-referenced through new retro wave kind of arty sort of horror.
I think that first 15 minutes could be re-edited and it would be better for the general audience, I'm thinking.
It might be, yeah. Because like I said, even I was just kind of like, like I was kind of interested, but I'm like, what is going on? But then after, like I said.
Some of the dialogue's kind of blocky, kind of, guys don't really talk that way. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
I wondered if it was dubbed because when I was watching the credits, it seemed like I don't know if it was shot in Germany, but it was like funded German. And I believe that the director is German. So I'm wondering
if they talk that way in Germany. But.
Well, no, I mean, maybe they did like, they used to do back in Italy in the day where it's like everybody would just like talk in their own accents and then they would just dub everybody over later. I'm not really sure if that's what happened. I mean, obviously Barbara Crampton wasn't dubbed because that was her real voice, but, I'm not sure about the other actors because apparently it's like some of the other actors kind of sounded like they were dubbed. Maybe it was just like ADR and it was their own voices. I don't know. But yeah, so it's on, Shudder if you want to check it out. If you're like into like kind of arty Cronenbergian type of horror, sort of filtered through an 80s new retro wave aesthetic, And if you liked stuff like The Neon Demon or The Perfection or something like that, this kind of reminded me that it was in that kind of vein. So it's on Shudder. It's probably streaming other places too. So check it out if you feel.